Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. There's the door banging.
Slamming door.
It's kind of late in the day and we had to sleep with all of our dogs because our children decided to go away and do something else. So.
Overnight. And a massive dog that usually sleeps with Rowan took up half the bed.
We have a small bed. We have like a, what is this called? A full,
yeah,
a double. We don't have like a big, huge bed, and it's jammed. It's wedged into the attic, like kind of a small space in the attic. And so we're uniquely not suited to have animals sleep with us.
Right, but they insist.
They were lonely and sad.
In the heat of the summer.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 degrees up here too. So we're here, though, because we're committed to our listener, and our voices matter. So we're going to talk about, Roe v. Wade.
I mean, everyone's already talked about it.
I know, that's what I'm like.
Should we get back from
vacation? What are we going to say?
I was dying to talk about it when we were like in Seville, in Spain.
Do you remember any of the things you wanted to say back then?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really great.
It's so good.
I guess what's interesting was being over there, trying not to
engage online.
Yeah, but then seeing people upset that other people were happy about it.
It's always
Christian people upset, quote unquote pro life Christian people upset that other Christian people were. We're not weeping with those who weep. That was the phrase that people were pulling out. We should be, you know, listen to the voices of women who have had abortions and are sad because their abortions are being taken away because Jesus commands us to weep with those who weep.
That's like, what did you say yesterday that Spong, is it Spong? Or no, somebody else said that when Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, what was it? You said something kind of like a reinterpretation of the scriptures that was really outlandish.
Oh, right. Yeah. It wasn't Spong, but it was, but he was one of them who did this. It was, because the greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbors yourself. All the other commandments are, you know, just don't matter as much. As long as you're loving God, you can have homosexual sex.
Oh, you can do whatever you want. Right. Yeah, you can just say, like, I love God, and now I'm going to shoot you.
Someone who really styles himself as an academic, intellectual, Episcopalian priest told me that.
That's right.
As long as we're loving God, so.
So really, if I want to say like weep with those who weep, it doesn't matter what the context of weeping is, or like.
So like the Nazi camp guard who can't kill Jews anymore and is sad because the Allies are freeing all of his prisoners.
He's really sad. You should come alongside him.
We should come alongside and weep with him. Because he's weeping. And that's really a good equivalent. All the Supreme Court did, and I say all, this is like 40 years.
I mean, it's an amazing thing that they did.
Deciding that it's not the government can't diktat that abortion must be legalized in all states. It's now, it goes back to the states to decide. The legislatures have decided whether
unless there's the federal government decides to make a new
theoretically
it could go back to the governing bodies to make laws if they wanted to do that instead of having the court do it.
I guess the federal government could, or the Congress and the Senate and Congress could try to put forward a national law making abortion legal in all 50 states, but that would be challenged, of course.
Yeah.
So they don't have the votes to do that right now. Even with Democrats in the House, we're running the House and the Senate, they still don't have the votes to do that, because that would require the ability to overcome a
We have all the words here today.
To overcome a filibuster. They don't have the votes to do that right now. And I mean, I heard someone talking about, let's make another constitutional amendment, making abortion a right under the but to do that, you also have to have majorities of all the states. And you just, it's not going to happen. So Roe v. Wade was huge because there's no way to fight the battle for killing babies for the pro-choice side, except going state by state and trying to persuade every legislature to make it legal.
Although, you know, like ours, they don't have any problem doing that.
We live in your state, but yeah, like Texas, Louisiana, and a lot of states had trigger laws where as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned, they would either immediately over the course of 30 days, abortion would become illegal in that state.
So a lot of the fault, like, so first of all, it was amazing that that happened, and that's so great. But as usual, it's not anymore. This is one of the great tragedies of modern existence. It's not the thing itself. It's the response online that is most fascinating. And then you watch people tweeting back and forth and writing articles about each other. And my favorite was Kevin DeYoung's Star Wars article about how when they blew up the Death Star, they were really sad and they wept with those who wept.
They got, like, back, and they, you know, there was,
and the, yeah, they were like,
it was very subdued,
yeah,
silent, quiet.
And they knew, like, they thought that they had killed the Death Star forever and that there would never be any other battles again. And so they were deluded and naive. And that was a great article.
It was a satire.
Yes.
Making fun of rewriting the end of the actual Star Wars,
where everyone was celebrating.
Because the Death Star was actually destroyed into a woke. Now it's time to listen to the voices of those who love the Death Star.
Yeah. Which, so one of the things that Roe did, like, for the last 40 years is it broke a lot of things. Like, it was a bad law. I read a lot of progressives even saying it was bad. It was a bad law.
Right.
It was just, or it was a bad ruling, and it created it just broke things.
Right.
So many things. But one of the things that it broke, was the ability, I think, like, it wasn't a slow erosion of being able to think. It really like broke apart something. It was like,
well, it was unconstitutional, so it built a precedent.
Yeah, but I mean, like, people who began to think, I have rights over my body.
Or, oh, you mean like socially?
Like socially, right. And ideologically, it broke something essential that was there all the time for, you know, thousands of years. And one of those things was the idea, like, the differentiation between the baby and the mother. Even though, of course, nobody has ever said that, like, ancient people didn't kill their babies, or that nobody knew what abortion was, you know, of course. But the sudden and violent expression of, I want to kill my baby before it's born, that will make me very happy. Like, you had an article yesterday, area woman, really happy that she had two abortions because now she can earn six figures and
right.
She has no regrets at all and would do it again, article.
Yeah, I found the headline. It was, the whole point of it was how wonderful abortion was and how sad it is it's being taken away because these people of color can't kill their babies anymore and succeed as corporate leaders.
Like, BIPOC, you know, in particular, it's really tragic that we can't kill more infants of color, which is so racist, but you know.
Yeah, here to
say. Anyway, what do I know?
A 43-year-old artist who runs a nonprofit that employs other women of color, says having two abortions helped her reach her goals.
And one of her goals was to have six figures. She's able to earn six figures,
right?
And that's really important.
Someone rewrote this article. This headline: 43-year-old racist who murdered two of her babies. Says baby murder helps her reach her goals of getting rich. which is right. That's what she's doing. First of all, she's racially profiling people before she hires them. And second, she's murdering her babies so that she can get rich. I mean, that's really all. I remember like in the 80s, 90s, abortion movement was all about let's make abortion rare and
legal, safe, and rare.
That's totally gone. I mean, and now, it started maybe five years ago. I started hearing women say, okay, it is a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're saying that, I think that's become increasingly.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a baby and I'm happy to kill it.
Yeah.
Like this makes me happy. And you need to rejoice with those who rejoice.
Right.
I want to say this before I forget because I don't have my, I'm in a fog. I just want to say, for Christians, it's not a good look. Like being on the side of ripping infants out of their mother's wombs. Those people who did that in the Bible were the Babylonians.
Right.
And they were universally reviled by the people of Israel and God. It's not a good look to be on the side of death. I don't want to I feel like it's strange to say that out loud.
But
when the Holocaust was over and the Nazis were defeated by what the West, it wasn't a good look to be a Nazi at that point. People backed off of that pretty quick and were like, oh no, I wasn't like that. I wasn't a Nazi. What are you talking about? I was never on the side of the Nazis. It was quickly a bad look. That's different this time. Even Christians are having a hard time. Well, I don't know if they're Christians or not. People who call themselves Christians are having a hard time finding their aesthetic way and being on the right side of history.
Well, part of the thing is, I mean, this within evangelicalism, the social justice movement, the woke movement, has so tried to transvalue the value system so that quote unquote justice is more focused on the woman having the abortion than on the baby who's being killed. I think part of the whole thing is that the evangelical left really, really wants to be loved by the secular left. And that underlies the entire woke movement as far as within the church is we really want woke leftists to love us. And so to do that, you've got to adopt notions of justice from the left and try to baptize them. And so you have people talking about justice, and they begin to see things like poverty, healthcare, immigration as just as important as life. And so, in fact, during the election, the presidential election, that was the whole thing. Well, life is one issue, but so is poverty and healthcare and all, and the climate and immigration, and so we're going to vote for life by supporting these candidates who are going to help us be pro immigration and pro poor people and pro whatever. And not just have abortion as the one issue that we're focused on. And that's such a,
okay, look,
to get there morally, I mean, think of any other issue, like any other equivalent issue to abortion, the gassing of Jews, the lynching of Black people. Let's say you had a candidate.
The Armenian genocide.
Take another issue. And this will explain why I voted the way I voted. But let's say you had two candidates. One is personally upright and honest and hasn't cheated on his wife and raises good children and is a churchgoer. But he thinks that we should promote sex slavery or lynching or name the thing, right?
He's a good Southern gentleman. He has good position. Whips his slaves on the weekends before church.
He whips his sex slaves on the weekend, and thinks that everyone should have a sex slave, and
or at least it's your right.
It's your right to have a sex slave, right? But otherwise, he's like personally really good, and like some of his policies might help people who are unemployed and might help immigrants, and might do some good things for people who are in need. But he does want to, you know, continue the sex slave trade. And then you have a personally wicked man who cheats on his wife, who drinks too much, who is just, you can't, he's a bad guy, but he wants to end the sex trade.
Are you talking about Winston Churchill and he drank every day or champagne?
I don't know. I mean, he's morally reprehensible.
He wasn't morally reprehensible. Winston Churchill was not morally
reprehensible, but we have a candidate who was. But he will do the best that he can to end the sex slave trade.
For whatever reason, late in life, he comes at least to, I don't know if he personally believes it, but he comes to take action to end a horrible wickedness.
Right.
And nobody understands why this happened, because for his whole life, he had never done that before and had always been on the other side, but whatever
I think it's totally fine. In fact, I think it's important for the Christian to vote for the lout who's going to end sex slavery. And that's why people, but see the on the evangelical left, it was never about justice. It was only about trying to find a way to help, a way for Christians to vote for leftists and to support ideologically left programs, and not vote for pro-life people, and still feel good about themselves. That's the whole point of it.
The spanner in that is that Christians in the 90s made a really big deal about Bill Clinton's personal morality. And so, they said, if a man cheats on his wife, you can't trust him. And so we shouldn't have leaders who cheat on their wives. And they stuck to that until they came to this latest person. And so the charge of hypocrisy rang true.
It did the first time, like 2016. I didn't vote for him. I voted for someone else. I didn't vote for the Democrat. I didn't vote for Hillary, but I voted for someone else because, I thought the reason was, though, I couldn't trust that he was going to do what he said.
Because people who cheat on other people are not trustworthy. Right. I mean, I think that's a fair statement.
Right.
If you cheat on your wife, it's possible, maybe you won't. It's possible, though, that you'll cheat on your next wife,
right?
You know, or you'll throw over the country for your own personal gain.
But by 2020, he had done exactly what he said he was going to do with regard to abortion,
which was a strange thing. I'm still is really odd to me that he.
By the time in 2020, we had three Supreme Court justices who were going to vote, who were going to be originalists and overturn, and it was. We had the best chance in the world to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it was because of that president doing what he said he was going to do. And again, I'm no fan of his. I'm really not. But when it comes to his keeping his promise to stop the Holocaust, or at least keep the Holocaust from being federally mandated, that to me was like, okay, I'll vote for the guy. Especially over somebody who is going to do the opposite, right?
I still believe in what I said back in 2016 when this person came, was narrowed down, and the only choice that America had was between Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump, that America was being forced by God to look at its own soul.
Yeah.
And everybody should have looked at those two people, and there should have been no triumphalism on either side. Everyone should have repented of their sins and said, why would God give us these two people? Right. Because we should have looked at ourselves and said, what have we done? Instead, of course, everybody blamed everybody else, and some people were delighted on both counts. And so I thought at the time, wouldn't it be strange if God used this humiliation to undo a great evil? That's just the sort of thing that God does all the time. Yeah. And he did. I feel like Christians should be able to say that. And so, you know, the church should have eaten its medicine and repented, and then at the end of Roe, rejoiced with those who would rejoice that evil rejoiced over righteousness, really. But no, what really happened is that, like, the division is further deepening, like more things have become visible through this about what people really believe than, I thought homosexuality was so clear. Like, you really cannot read the Bible at all and make a case for the blessing of same-sex relationships. You can't do that at all. And yet, over the last 10 years, Christians who knew 10 years ago that homosexuality was wrong,
right,
are now thinking that it's possible to be a Christian and to believe in same-sex marriage. Well, and now, not only so, it's abortion is similarly an obvious thing, but now there are people who profess to be Christians who are like, well, wearing a mask is just as important as not killing, or like baby murder and mask wearing are morally equivalent. So I think that's really astonishing. And again, it's not a good look. I don't want to be standing near people who profess to believe in Jesus, who think that it's okay for a woman to commit murder and other people around her, and then go and have the name of Jesus on your lips. I want to back away from you, because I feel like God has judged.
Listen, the earth is going to open up.
The earth is going to open up, and you might be swallowed, or something bad might happen. And I don't want to, like, I'm surprised that we're all still here, is what I'm saying.
Right.
God has been very gracious. So we should be very sorry for our sins, but also very happy. Like, part of that is being very happy about injustices that are overturned.
I mean, but you know why they're not? I mean, another reason they're not happy is because one of the major planks in the argument. I think the whole idea, the AND campaign, all of it was just a way of getting Christians to feel justified in voting Democrat. But part of the plank in that argument was, well, Republicans never do anything to help the pro-life cause anyway. And, you know, we had, like, how many pro-life presidents have we had? Nothing's changed. Well,
and that was true. Like, I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Over and over again for 40 years that Republicans said, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and they never did.
Right.
That was sickening.
Well, now, I mean, that's why it was so shocking. All of the smarmy, like, self-righteous, the condescending speeches by evangelical leftists, woke people, about how hypocritical people were for voting for Trump. For just that reason, for just the abortion reason. In fact, we were told during the election, no one actually does that. Remember that part of...
Yeah, that was Dumais.
Yeah, no one actually does that.
Which is not true.
I literally did vote for him only for that reason.
Just for that. It was a single voting issue.
Yep, yep. But that plank of nothing ever gets done is totally gone now. I mean, every pro-life vote has been vindicated by this, by the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Every single one. They're totally vindicated. The greatest victory, the greatest legal victory, and I would say cultural victory ever in the last
along
century.
With like so, yeah over overturning slavery
yeah yeah
this was is a like, huge cultural victory yeah, this yeah. is like that this is really like
exactly
that. So we should be celebrating, amazed and
we
happy
should mark the date. It was a feast of John the Baptist's nativity. We should mark the date. We should celebrate every year. It should be a liturgical feast because babies are now have the opportunity. Now in this country, there's a chance that we can actually end the baby killing. Yeah, we're going to end it. A lot of states has already done, but we could push this forward and we could become a nation that doesn't kill its babies anymore, which is that was impossible to think, even conceive of months ago.
And speaking of, you know, BIPOC, imagine how much more diverse the country would be right now. Imagine how many more black communities wouldn't have been devastated and would have had people.
I was reading
so much people.
I think the majority of black babies were aborted in New York City. In New York City, the majority of black babies are aborted, I believe.
More are aborted than born. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is horrendous. It's awful.
It's so deeply and terribly racist.
Right. Well, it's just, you know, we all know the Margaret Sanger thing.
Yeah.
Her love of abortion, her love for sterilizing minorities so they don't reproduce. And she's, of course, the heroine of Planned Parenthood. She's the one who began it.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, I'm really happy. And of course, pro-life Christians were thinking that when Roe was overturned, that everything was golden now and we had no work to do. Like, more than other people who are in the pro-life movement and who work in pregnancy centers and give to them and know how uphill it is and how fraught and how exhausting and how few rewards there are and how you just, it's a hard slog. The pro-life movement has been a hard slog, and it's contrary though to what's so wonderful about the pro-life movement is so contrary to every single, to the deep gospel of the age, which is I will glorify myself.
Yeah.
The pro-life movement has steadily said no to that over and over, just consistently said no to that, and been there living out the gospel of Jesus for the most vulnerable. And so they're not dumb. They know that it is still a hard slog. And if anything, it's hard because people are so angry now. And I mean, they were angry before. Incidentally, if you're looking for how to be happy in your life, the more you're given what you want, the more you get to have what you want, the more angry you will be in general, if what you want is wickedness. And that is so apparent now. Like, leave rage alone. Go away from rage. Go away from your own moral superiority about various issues and just put your head down and work for the gospel. Because the rage is not a good look.
It's really fascinating. Like,
it's not a good look.
It's fascinating in pro-baby murder states like New York State, that now the big evil are the pregnancy centers, the life choices center. I'm the board of one of these things. And now, what's her name? The senator,
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, right.
She's going to shut them all down.
She's on the warpath against, that's a mistake. But.
So I think a great image that Christians should hang on to is for the pro-life movement and for this in general, being a Christian in this age, isn't Daniel. Like, don't go be Daniel. And also, you're probably not Jesus and you're not Paul either, but you could be Gideon. Like, Gideon was questionable character, and he did not have belief in God, and he did not have his life together, and he was afraid, and God took a lot of people away from him. He had a very small set of stuff. He didn't get to have what he wanted, but he ended up being, he was obedient in the long term. he did what God told him to do. Mm. And God was strong enough, because it's not about our efforts, except that we do have to show up and be obedient. So you just, you know, don't lay a fleece, though. I mean, you can if you want. I do all the time.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, though, that I was going to talk about the pregnancy centers.
Oh, sorry. Go on. Well, no, because I feel like the pregnancy centers are like Gideon.
People doing like, the hard work of helping.
Yeah. And women they doubt themselves, you know,
right.
They don't have the resources they want. And from a temporal perspective need, but they do it. Like, then they don't ask for big acclamations either in general. I mean, the people who work in our local one are not needing to be given awards.
No, they don't. And they don't, no one knows who they are.
Yeah, which is probably good.
But really, you go into that place and there are, if you need diapers, you need formula, you need help, financial help, you can get it. And people will talk to you and help you think through parenting, not just like the thing that Planned Parenthood says it's supposed to do, like help parents.
Planning
parenthood. Like these centers actually do. Yeah, they do give away free sonograms. So you can go in there. If you're considering an abortion, you do go in there and you will be told about the reality of what's happening inside of you. And you'll be shown a picture of the baby that you're contemplating killing. But I don't think any of these centers put themselves out there as, hey, come get an abortion here, and then bait and switch. No, they don't do that. It is true that if you Google abortion or whatever, you'll find some of these centers popping up, but none of them lie about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And even if some did, it would be like saying, it would be like, hey, I'm trying to find a place to kill my Jew. Where can I go to kill Jews? And if you had someone say, hey, come here. And then
don't do that.
Do you get someone telling you not to kill your Jew?
Like, come over here. Come here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do that. Stop doing that.
That's not morally bad. That's not morally bad. A center trying to stop women from murdering their babies or husbands or boyfriends for trying to force their girlfriends or wives to murder their babies is not a bad thing. And if in any moral universe where that becomes a bad thing is a moral universe in which there's
chaos.
There's chaos. Right. Exactly. So.
So, yeah, I mean, one reason why it's okay to be a single issue voter on this question alone is that all of the other things do rise up out of this. Because if the culture says some people are not allowed to live, mm-hmm. then all of the other goods of human society are compromised because corrupted by that. So you can't think clearly about immigration or parental leave or daycare. You can't think clearly about anything. You can't think clearly about race. If you're saying some of the people here are, we have to kill them for us to be okay. You're not going to be able to think or legislate about any of those other things.
Right.
And so your compassion is already deeply corrupted. Your moral vision is so deeply corrupted you can't see. So you should stop. Here's the solution, though. Stop. Say, I'm so sorry. Jesus, please forgive me. Let your blood, the blood of the cross, cover me. I'm sorry. Please help me to do good and not evil. And then, you know, try again tomorrow. Like,
right.
We have the gospel for Christians and for the world. Like, it's really never been a better time to be Christian because it's so uncomplex. Like, this is one of the lines are so clear. If you think they're fuzzy, again, very simple. Just get down on your knees right now, calling you to repentance as you're listening to this. Say, I'm sorry, Jesus, please help me. I don't understand. And then he'll forgive you and you can go find a pastor. We'll help you think through these issues. there's probably even people online you could DM and say, like, I needed help. I thought that abortion was awesome and I needed to shut my abortion. And I thought that gay marriage was, I thought that, that gay marriage was bad, but I didn't think it was that bad. And I actually, you know, should think we should do a bait and switch on gay marriage and tell people it's totally fine to be gay, but then that then they can't have sex. I thought that was okay. Also not okay.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting that the abortion thing has the same dynamic that the sexuality thing, you know, that we've talked before about how you people have orthodox views of sexuality until their child comes out.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden, I've got to rethink what the Bible says. In fact, I don't care what the Bible says. I want, because I love my child, I now have to be supporting my child in this way of living. Same thing with it. I mean, I've heard the same thing with abortion. Like, I was anti-abortion. I was against killing a baby in a womb until my daughter did that, or my sister did that, or my mother did that, or whatever.
And then I realized how much better.
It's okay. It's, I mean, and I, that's where I get almost irrationally angry because it's, how do these people parent when your child like lies? Is that, I used to think lying was wrong, but then my child lied, and so it's okay. Or I used to think that, you know, bludgeoning puppies with a knife was wrong, but then my child bludgeoned a puppy with a knife, and so, you know what? It's totally fine. How do they morally reason themselves out of a paper bag? You can't.
Well, in the question of lying, I think you see that your child has told a lie, and you don't say lying is okay, but then you think, oh, well, I wonder what made that child lie. And there must have been something that happened. Maybe I did something, or I didn't think about the needs of the child. The child was hungry. The child was tired. Mm. It's actually my fault that the child lied because I didn't meet the child's needs ahead of time. And so the moral failing in the child is actually not, it's weakness on my part and weakness on the child. And so we can correct that by having better executive function. If I create a better system so that I, the needs of the child are, you know, I'm better at anticipating the needs of the child. So we'll have lunch 15 minutes earlier and then the child won't lie. No, I'm not kidding. This is how this works. You end up being on a footing with your child where you are in, you're constantly psychologizing the child to figure out why they're doing bad things. What kind of trauma have I participated in hurting the child or other people so that the child is telling a lie? And two, it's just because it's weakness or an accident. The child actually just had to tell a lie because I didn't anticipate his needs. I can create a better system. No. And so that's the baseline. Yes. And so everything is built on that. Whereas that's not how you should do this. If your child tells a lie, even if the child is hungry and tired, the child has sinned against God.
Right.
Well, for whatever reason. You can be compassionate. You can preach the gospel, which you should, but you have to tell the child not to lie.
Right.
And that it was actually the child's fault. Even if you
made a mistake parenting,
it's still the child is fault. Still a sinner. And the child must not lie. Stop lying, child.
Right.
And the reason that the child lied is because the child was a sinner. There wasn't something deeper or more complicated than that, really. Right. The child was a sinner and wanted something he shouldn't have had. In a way he shouldn't have had it. And so he told a lie to get what he wanted.
Okay. That's so fascinating.
So that's just, everything is built on that difference of parenting. Christians should not psychologize their children. They should not look deeply into the souls of their children to figure out why they did bad things. Why? Because they're sinners.
The building block of that, or the philosophical foundation for that thinking, is the same thing that says, okay, the reason the country's messed up
is because the systems are wrong.
And we just need to fix the system and everything will be fine.
If we just had lunch 15 minutes earlier,
right, right,
everyone would stop being bad.
Right. And Jesus said it pretty clearly. No, the reason the systems are messed up is because you're messed up.
You are a bad person and you are a liar.
And you can't fix that. You can't. Only Jesus can fix that. So that's the problem. And the same thing. But for some reason, even evangelical parents, Christian parents, have taken
the systems thing,
the utopian view of civil society, where it's just a matter of fixing some externals, and then the true goodness of humanity will shine through. And they've applied that to their children.
It's very subtle, and right. Of course, I think Christian parents know that about sin, and they know about repentance, and most of them are doing a pretty good job. But I've heard this kind of talking seeping in for the last 10 years. I've heard this. Yeah. Way of Christian parents talking about their children. And look, I keep trying to make better systems. I do, you know, sure. If your toddler is melting down and is saying no to you, you've told your toddler not to say no, to say yes, ma'am, but the child is just screaming, and you look at your watch and realize that you missed lunchtime. Oh my word, stop and feed the child lunch. Like, don't be a Nazi here. Eat lunch and then say, you're not allowed to say no to me, sweetie. Yeah. I love you. You need to say, yes, mommy. And then say, I'm hungry. Please feed me lunch. Or something like, teach the child to communicate. Teach the child to have a good relationship with his body and to learn how to tell whether his blood sugar is low. Like, there's a lot of
things. Because if you don't do that, what happens though is like suffering or pain becomes an excuse for evil. Like,
yeah.
Like, so if you say, your child, oh, I understood why you did it because you were hungry. It's fine. No,
you can.
I don't
still
care
say
how
that.
Hungry, like, the child is.
You can say, I understand that you were hungry and you said no to me, but you're still in trouble because
right.
you said no.
There's still consequences.
Yeah.
And so that what that does is because what will happen is your kid is going to learn. Oh well, it's okay for me to lash out when I'm feeling pain.
Yep.
And it's and I can I'm a slave to my feelings. I'm a slave to
my
how,
pain.
Right. Right. Rather than saying, I can control myself. I can control my body. Because I'm feeling this, I don't have to act in this way.
Yep. So.
We've bridged over from Roe v. Wade.
I know. Well, and interestingly enough, if you, one reason that women cannot have their babies is because they have not been, for two things, taught to experience pain. And they don't know anything about children, like the divorce between a culture and all the children in it. So children are so special, but they're also nothing. It's
right.
like this weird
right.
thing. And so people don't have one thing that my children said to me recently while we were on holiday is that they're realizing as they meet other people who are single children or only have one sibling, often those other people really do think that there are no differences between men and women. Like if you grow up and you're a girl and you have no brothers, you might really, and you watch a lot of Disney movies, you might really think that you're as strong as a man. Like they're meeting people who really do think that there's no biological difference between men and women. And one of the reasons for that is because those people don't have siblings and have not encountered the physical biological realities of other people in a real way. And their parents haven't said, this is how things work. Like, you have to eat. You're a child, so you have to eat lunch and then have a nap. And boys, you know, want to push trucks. I mean, there's it's like such a deep rot. And women in particular, younger women, don't know how to raise children. And so it is. Yeah. And if you can't have pain, it's a terrifying, you do feel abused by reality. You're like, I'm literally being tortured now by this child. Right. I should get rid of it.
Right.
So there's a lot of work for pro-lifers and Christians. Like there's so much that you could do just backtracking gently, telling people, hey, it's okay. Like this baby's not going to kill you, your child, but you do have hard work to do. Like you do have to do things like tell the child to obey you. So that you don't want to kill it anymore. We've gone on too long. It's time for us to
call it a day.
Call it a day. So come back for more tips.
How not to kill your baby.
Yeah, how not to kill your baby. Yeah. How to be nice to people who are really confused.
That. What should we talk about next week? Should we set an agenda for ourselves?
I don't see how on earth we would do that and actually remember by next week.
That's true. We don't remember things very
well. We don't remember anything. If you want us to talk about something, please, listener, tell us. But we will probably be back next week. Thank you for listening.